We are holding on Sadi Gimel Amud Aleph.
Just invented a new, by the way, a new metal fabrication.
Okay, all right. So we're holding on Sadi Gimel Amud Aleph by the second Mishnah near the bottom. Now we're finished with the topic of workers eating on the job, and now the remaining blocks of this perek and the first couple of blocks of the next one are going to be about the Galad Shremim. So we talked about the Galad Shremim earlier, and in Hamaskid we learned about them a bit, and now we're going to be going back to that topic. Mishnah says, Abba Shremim Hain, there are four categories of Shremim. Shremim Chinam, V'hashoyel, Noisesacha, V'hasecha. The basic rules are as follows. Shremim Chinam Nishma Lakoil. Shremim Chinam swears on anything that happens. Whatever happens to the thing, except for Pshia, of course, he would swear that this is what happened, and he would be called to from paying. Actually, we learned earlier that we had, in Hamaskid, we had Rahuna saying that he also has to swear that's not Bershosai, etc. But the bottom line is, once he swears and based in whatever he's supposed to swear, then he's called to. Vashoyol Mashalom Sakoyol. Vashoyol is the other way around. He has to pay for everything. There's nothing for which he is called to except for Mesa Machmas Walacha, which we're not dealing with at the moment. A shomer sacher are somewhere in the middle. They have to swear if the animal was broken or taken captive or died. Or mishamanis aveda v'segneva, they pay if it was an aveda, if it was a loss that could have been preventable, or a theft that could have been preventable. That doesn't rise to the level of onus. And we'll see examples in the Gemara of what the difference is when it rises to the level of onus, when not. So the Gemara says, Man Tana Abba Shomrin. Which Tana is it that says this concept of four Shomrin? Amar Rav Nachman.
How do we know that there's one Tana?
We've discussed before. We had before in Arma Sechta, we had in Bava Kama, we had sporadically here and there that we have the Machlokas from Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. Who is a Shomer Sachar like? Is a Shomer Sachar basically like a Shomer Chinam? Or is he basically like a Shomer Sachar? That's what we have to figure out. Which one?
Socher is like a Shomer Chinam?
No, a Socher, a renter. A Socher is basically like a Shomer Chinam, meaning that if the thing is lost or stolen, he swears and he's potter. Or is he basically like a Shomer Socher, that those things he'd have to pay for, he's only potter for oinus?
Or in between.
Well, it's one or the other.
A renter instead of someone who you're paying to watch that.
Right, so a renter, so that's the thing. So Rashi mentioned...
Why don't we make an extra category for the Socher?
Because all the Pasuk says about the Socher, it's like this. The Pasuk, we're going to learn at the beginning, it's interesting, the part of the Gemara that belongs on this Mishnah is actually going to be in the next Perek. This parak is almost over, but yeah. At the beginning of the last parak, that we're going to go through the limudim, how we know what exactly a shem chinam is liable for and what a shem sachar is liable for. The bottom line is like this: the parsha which we're going to explain over there is talking about a shem chinam. Says that if anything happens, that the animal is stolen or what have you, then he goes to Beis Din and swears, and if he's telling the truth, then fine, and if not, if he himself stole it, then he pays double because he himself was a guy. Then it continues with another case, which we explain there means a Shema Sacher, where we say that if it was lost or stolen, he has to pay. So he's only potter for onus. Then the pasuk mentions shoyel. It says if the person borrows from somebody else, if the owner is with him, which we'll discuss at the beginning of the next perek, Bezus Hashem, we'll get to it tonight, we'll see, that if the owner is with him, then he doesn't pay. If the owner is not with him, shalom, then he has to pay, regardless of what happens, meaning even onus. Then the pasuk continues, im sochehu, if he's a renter, bo bischore, he comes with his schar. So what does that mean? He comes with a schar. It means, in other words, obviously what it means is he has a lesser liability than a shoyl, but how much less? Like a shema sacher or like a shema chinam? We have no other basis to say if there's anything in between. It's either he's chayav for gneva v'aveda and potter for oynes, or he's potter on gneva v'aveda as well. So Rashi earlier in the Masechta explains the logic behind the two possible ways is, on the one hand, we can argue, okay, he has the benefit of using the thing, but he's paying for that benefit. So therefore, those two things kind of cancel each other out, and you're left with basically he's a shomer chinam. Basically, then he's the fact that he has an obligation to guard the thing. He's not paying for that, but he's not that cancels out. So
it's not
that's the definition of a socher is that he's paying for the use of the thing, But therefore, because of that, he has the use of it. The fact that he has to watch it is something extra. There's no payment involved with that. Therefore, the law. Therefore, maybe there's logic to say that he should be a shevachina. On the other hand, maybe what you could say is, and there's a sicha in Chelik Lamed Aleph where the Rebbe analyzes this. We'll talk about more of it in a second. But that's based on Rashi's lashon that over there. That the Rebbe explains what Rashi. The other possibility that Rashi says is that. Basically, a socher ought to be like a shoyl. After all, he has the use of the thing. In that sense, he is very much like a shoyl. The difference is, unlike a shoyl, who doesn't have to pay for it, here he's paying for it. So therefore, we could argue, fine, he doesn't have the higher liability of a shoyl, but nevertheless, we shouldn't downgrade him all the way to a shoyl machinam. He should be like a shoyl socher. That's the basic logic between the two possibilities. So now we have to figure out, our Mishnah, which starts out... That's what we're arguing. We have
why not like a shoyl?
Because he's not like a shoyl, because a shoyl has all the benefit, because he doesn't have to pay for it. A socher has to pay for the use of it.
Yeah, but he's still keeping the thing...
But that's why, that's the argument to say, why he should be like a shoyl socher. On the other hand, you could say maybe not even. The fact that he's allowed to use the thing is cancelled out by the fact that he has to pay for it. The fact that he has now a responsibility to guard it is something extra, and that makes him a shoyl chinam. So, man tana abar shomrim. So, which tana is it that says this concept of abar shomrim? Amar of Nachman, Amar Rav Bravo, Rav Meir. That is according to the Meir. But before we get to what we mean that it's according to the Meir, Amar le Rav Lord of Nachman, the Ikud Lesle abar shomrim. What do you mean? Is there anybody who doesn't hold of the concept of abar shomrim? Of course. The fact of the matter is, it is possible to have four kinds of shomrim. It is physically possible to have a shomer chinam, a shomer sacher, a shoyel, and a socher.
Where would he disagree with that?
Yeah, exactly. In other words, what do you mean? As if only the Meir holds of that concept, and other Tanoi might hold differently. Amalei, so Rav Nachman says, Hachi Kaminoloch. What I mean to say, when we ask, Man Tana Abar Shomrim, Man Tana Socher Kenoise Socher. Which Tana is it that says that the Socher has basically the same din as the Noise Socher, as our Mishnah continues? In other words, some of the Mepharshim say that what Rav Nachman means, when we started off by asking, Man Tana Abar Shomrim, we didn't mean which Tana holds that there's such a thing as four Shomrim. Of course, all of them do. What we mean is, which Tana is it that taught this Mishnah that begins with the words Abar Shomrim? And goes on to say that the socher is like the shomer socher, and that would be the point to the main. In that sicha, the Rebbe explains that no, rather the point is a little bit different. If we say the first way of looking at it that a socher is basically like a shomer chinam because the fact that he gets the benefit of using it is canceled out by the fact that he has to pay for it, then you could argue, fine, he's essentially a shomer chinam. Then you could argue it's not really four different kinds of shomerim; it's really three different kinds where one of them has a variation. On the other hand, if you say that a socher, it has the dinim of a shomer socher, but the reason he has the dinim of a shomer socher is different than the reason behind a shomer socher. Essentially, he ought to have been a shoyl, except for the fact that he's downgraded from shoyl because he's paying for it. Therefore, then we could really argue there really are four different distinct dinim of shomer. It turns out, practically speaking, that he has the liabilities of a shomer socher, but it's not for the same reason as a shomer socher. Because a shomer socher has those liabilities because he's getting paid for what he's doing, whereas the socher he has more liabilities than a shomer chinam because he's being paid as compared to a shomer socher. As opposed to a socher, looking at it this way, has more of those responsibilities because he has the use of it. It's a different logic than the shomer socher. They still come out somewhere in between, but as far as liability, but the reason why they come from one to the other is different. So that's what Rav Nachman is saying. If we say that a socher is like a shomer socher, as far as the dinim, then the reasoning behind it is two different reasonings, and therefore we could validly say abar shomer him, that there really are four different dinim, four different logical categories of shomer. Okay, so the problem is, Don't we find Rav Meir saying the other way around? The Tanya is the learner of Braisa. Socher keitzed meshalim. How does a socher pay? What's his level of liability? Rav Meir emet Hashem achinam. Rav Yehuda emet Hashem asacher. So Rav Meir is the one who says he's like Hashem achinam. So what are you telling me on Mishnah that says he's like Hashem asacher is according to Rav Meir? The answer is Rav Baravua ipcha katani. Rav Baravua, who answered the question, who said that our Mishnah goes like Rav Meir, holds that the Braisa goes the other way around. That Rav Meir is the one who says he's like a shomer socher, and Rav Yehuda is the one who says he's like a shomer chinam.
Why does he hold like that?
That's the version of the braisa as he learned it. The problem with that is he hachi abar shloshim. If so, then what do you mean? Then first, what are you saying that there's four kinds of shomerim? The fact is there's only three sets of dinim. That's what it means. Galav shomim, rinayim shlosha. It means there's four different categories of shomim. However, when it comes down to the practical, one ends as a practical, as a matter of practical halacha, one of them ends up getting combined with the other one. The noisy sachar and the socher basically have the same level of liability. But again, based on that sicha, they come at it from different angles, though. One, because he's getting paid for his work, and the other one, because he has the benefit of using it.
Still, Torah says it's four.
That's the point. In other words, there are four categories. That's the thing. There are four logical categories. However, functionally, it comes out there's only three. Yes. In that sicha, by the way, then the Rebbe goes on to explain the deeper idea behind this business of the Dalit Shemir, based on a shalom. The Shemir Chinam represents a person who serves Hashem without any expectation of reward. Shalom and Aspakav Prat, which is the best thing. The Shoyal, therefore, he has very little liability. Therefore, he's serving Hashem in the best possible way. Therefore, he has very little liability for anything he does wrong, because there's very little likelihood he's going to do anything wrong. If he's preshea, fine, but that's a rare case. The shoyel is the other way around. The shoyel is the one who expects that basically Hashem is giving me everything that I need, and I don't have to do anything in return. Therefore, he's responsible for.
The
shem
echinam is like
shalav, shalav, shalish. So the shem echinam is like, okay, fine. The shoyel, yeah. So the shoyel is the one who's taking. He's the one who's taking and not giving. Actually, the Rebbe goes on to explain in the sicha, not necessarily. I mean, the fact is, we're calling him a shomer. He is, after all, doing an avodah, but he's doing avodah only based on the fact that he's only based on the natural love that a yid has for the Eibishter from Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, rather than developing it on his own.
He's doing everything for himself.
No, well, but the point is, it's not so much that he's doing everything for himself. He's not working on his own level of avodah. He's just doing whatever I learned from my ancestors. They had a love for Hashem, so it comes by me naturally, and I'm just doing that. But he's not working on developing it on his own.
As opposed to
Hashem Echinam, who's the other way around, who's doing everything for the sake of Hashem. The Gnosis Sachar and the Socher fall somewhere in between. They're the ones, each in their own way, who is serving Hashem with an expectation of reward. And then it explains over there the details, how the Shema Sacha represents one way of doing that, the Sotha represents the other, whether you're looking at the reward first and then the Avoida, or the Avoida first then the reward, but therefore they fall somewhere in between here. But therefore, the Gemara, and therefore we end up saying that they are functionally the same as far as Halacha, because even if you're a Sotha, the lower level of those two, fine, you can work your way up at least to be a Shema Sacha, to be doing it. You're doing it on a nafka kava pras, but at least, you know, a tosh shalol l'shma bol l'shma, you'll eventually come to the right thing.
The socher is
kind of a lower level between those two,
because he's
sort of like, I'll get what I need from Hashem, and then afterwards I'll see about doing the avoda. He won't be like a shalol who doesn't do it at all, but he's not first working on avoda. But at least he can work. That's a socher, but at least
he gets the item and then he pays for it.
Basically, and so therefore, we want him to at least work his way up to be a shomer socher, where at least he'll be doing the avoda first, and he'll get paid at the end.
Right,
and therefore,
the
shomer socher represents the person who's doing it for the sake of the reward.
Watch this for you, and then you're
and then you're going to pay me at the end. The socher is paying. The shomer socher
is getting the cut.
Yeah, when we say getting a schad, I think that's how it went in the sicha, but I don't know. I might have those two backwards. I'm not sure. I'd have to look at the sicha again. Anyway, let's continue. It's possible I got it backwards. All right, anyway, onwards. Okay, so now we're going to have some cases of oinus versus gneva v'aveda. Or not gneva, we'll talk about aveda, whatever. Ahu raya to have a karoi chevasa agudu nehav papa. There was once a shepherd who was pasturing some animals that he was watching as a shema sachar on the banks of the river Papa. Shorig chadaminai, one of them slipped, v'nafal flamaya, and it fell into the water and drowned. Also kameh d'rabba, so he came to Rabba for a din Torah, upatria, and Rabba pastured him on the basis that it was something closer to an onus. Omar, because he said, the animal slipped, because sometimes it happens, an animal slips.
He took it just next to the bank?
He took it by the bank. They were pasturing over there, whatever.
So
Omar, so Rabbah said, my havalei l'meva. What else could he have done? Ha-nata kedinatri inchi. Didn't he watch these animals like normal people watch them? In other words, it's normal to take animals to the riverbank to pasture and to drink and whatever. If one of them slipped, you can't consider it an aveda, Rabbah argues. Now, we'll see later on this.
But if
the place where people commonly bring their animals, then Rabbah argued, as long as you're doing what normal people do with their animals, then you should be popular. It's considered a form of onus. Mm. Amalei Abaya, Abaya asks him, Elamayata, by that logic, if you're just saying you can just do whatever normal people do, what happens, for example, he goes back home to the city at the time when people normally leave work and leaves the sheep behind. Hachanami depotu, you're going to tell me also he's potter?
People don't do that. They leave the sheep around. Well, they bring them back to their...
Sometimes, yes. They go in for a little while. They go in, let's say, for lunch or whatever, yeah.
So what's the comparison between sheep and between an animal that you bring to the river?
I don't understand. Either way, so you're asking, during the time when he was away, let's say a lion came and devoured one of them or whatever. If he had been there, maybe it wouldn't have. On the face of it, though, people normally, when they're watching their own sheep, they don't mind leaving them for a little while to go into town for an errand or whatever. You're going to tell me the same thing with a shomer.
But here he didn't leave the animal.
It's the same kind of principle, though. If you're telling me that as long as you do what people normally do with their animals, that it's considered an onus, then in that case, by the same logic, he goes into town for an errand, as the time when people normally go. And Rabbah says, yes, that would in fact be the case. Okay, Abai asks and continues asking, Gonapurta, what happens if he takes a little nap at the time when people usually have their siesta, when people usually take their nap, and meanwhile someone comes and steals or an animal comes and takes it or whatever. Hakan Ami de Potter, again, you're going to say he's Potter because he's acting like what people usually do. Usually, it's a normal thing at that time that people do. And Rabbah tells him, yes, indeed, even in that case. However, Esve, so Abai asks, the following are the kind of onus that a shomer socher is potter for. Kigoin, but people shvavat tochem, like the kind of thing described in the tzoris that Eov had, that the army of shva attacked. And took them, the animals, and they killed with the sword the young men who were watching the animals. So that kind of thing is called an onus when you have like armed bandits or whatever, but nothing less than that. So what are you telling me, that if a guy goes to sleep at the normal time, etc., then it's an onus? It seems like only if it was something that he there was no way he could have prevented.
How do we know that in this dictionary, for example, it was...
Because that's what the pasuk is saying. But people shuvat tikachem as on anything could be harder. That there was they fell on them as on bandits. So therefore, it sounds like only in that case. So are you pasuk nothing less than that. Amalei. So Rabbah answers him. Hosam b'chazne masa. No, because that braisa is not talking about a regular case of a shomer socher. That one is talking about the watchmen of the city. Now they're the night watchmen of the city. People are relying on them, Pasha. Their lives, their property depends on them. Yeah, that kind of person. Yeah, if you were to take a snooze in the middle of the night over there, if you were to go into town for an errand or whatever, sure, he'd be tired because everybody
in the base of Migdash, they burn him.
No, they wouldn't. They just burn his clothes, but whatever. Yeah, but nothing less than that. Okay, I say, Abai asked him for another braisa. Another braisa clearly says, up to what point is a shomer socher obligated to guard? How far does his obligation of guarding go? Ad kedei ha'yisi b'yoyim ha'chalani chorev v'kerev ha'loyla. To the point where, like Yaakov says to Lavan at the end of the 20 years, that I had this situation. I was like this while I'm watching your sheep. By day, I was eaten up by the heat and by the frost, by the cold at night. So again, it sounds like he has to be up and with the sheep all the time, or at least as much as possible, no snoozing in the middle of the day, no going into town or whatever. So Rabbah tells him, yeah, the same, again, that braisa can also be talking about the chazne masa, the night watchman. What do you mean, Yaakov wasn't a night watchman, he was just a shepherd? The answer is, no, but what we mean is, what the braisa means is that Abaye is telling Lavan, Natri l'cha nitirusa yiseta, I watched for you the sheep extra carefully, kechazne masa, like the way a night watchman would be expected to watch. Yes, I could have gotten away with the din, like Rabbah is saying, I could have gotten away with the idea that look, a shomer socher only has to do what people normally do, and therefore I could have taken a nap during the day, and I could have gone to town on errands and whatever, but I didn't. I held myself to a higher standard.
So it's not really a good example.
So it's not a good example to say that everybody is chayav to do that, right? Okay, Esve. Abaya asks him another contradiction from a braisa. Roya shoya roya v'hiniach edra. If a shepherd is pasturing the sheep, v'hiniach edra, and he leaves the sheep behind, he leaves the herd behind, uvala ir, and he comes into the city. And while he's away, a wolf comes and grabs one of the animals, or a lion comes and kills one of the animals. Taraf and Doras, Rashi explains, Taraf is what a wolf does, a wolf being a weaker creature than a lion. It usually will kill the animal and then schlep it back to its lair. What Rashi says is what the wolf will do is he'll wound the animal but not kill it, and then drag it off someplace else where he's safe and then kill it. Whereas the Ari, because it's not afraid of most other animals, it'll usually just kill the animal right on the spot and eat it. Anyway, so the Braita continues, Ein oimdim ilu ha'yisham ha'yamah. So we do not estimate and say, well, look, if the shepherd had been there, he could have saved the animal, and therefore it's pshia, and therefore he should be chayev. No, what we have to do is we have to evaluate the situation. If he could have saved the animal, then he's chayev, because then it's pshia, or then it's pshia. And if not, then he's potter. Now, well, therefore, the point is, my love to all the idna daily inchi. When we mention in the Braisa that he left the flock and went into the city, lechora, doesn't that mean the pastures, it means he went in when the rest of the people are usually going, when they're done work for the day, and he goes in as well. And therefore, you see, he's chayim. We're saying that we evaluate, if the situation is that he could have saved the animal if he was there, then we're saying he's chayim. Whereas you're telling me a blanket statement, even though he's a shomer sacher, Rabbi is saying he's always potter.
He's always potter
because he's just doing what people usually do. So that contradicts this price.
And the answer is loy.
No, you don't have to say that, because you could say d'ol b'idna d'loy aile inchi.
No, what?
No, you don't have to explain the b'raisa that way. You could say that the b'raisa is talking about where he went into town, not at the time where people usually go in. There's a certain period of the day when people are usually out in the field pasturing their sheep or whatever. He decided all of a sudden to leave them in the middle of the day and go run into town for an errand or whatever. No. Sure, that's pshia. But if he left, the b'raisa didn't specify, but we could understand the b'raisa that way. The question is, am I potter? No, on the contrary. In that case, why would there ever be a case he's potter? Isn't it a case that, as we've learned earlier, that if he starts out by being pesheya, and it turns out that the loss was caused by something, an onus, then we say that we had a discussion about it earlier in Hamaskid, and we ended up saying halacha is chayev. In this case, if we were to argue that if he's going into town, the idna delay aili itchi, at the time when people don't usually go in, that's pshia, leaving the animals out there in the middle of the day.
But if he goes
in the end, it turns out to be an onus, because in the end, we're saying, let's say the animals were powerful enough that we can figure even if he had been there, he wouldn't have been able to overpower them. The animals would have ended up
the
wild.
That's the point.
It's philosophy of Shia for Sefer Bainas. And in that case, he's Chayav. Mm-hmm. So what are we saying? We evaluate what the situation would have been. Regardless what the situation would have been, once he's Pesheya at the beginning, he should be Chayav. Now, when we learned about philosophy of Shia for Sefer Bainas, we learned.
If we say Sefer Bainas, we do evaluate.
If it's Chalosar Rav Siya v'Seifah B'Shia, there's no question he's Chayim. If it's Chalosar Rav Siya v'Seifah B'Onus, namely, he was Pesheya because he left the animals alone.
Right.
Now, in the end, it's an Onus because, let's say, three lions came and attacked, and there's no way he would have been able to fight them all. Nonetheless, we're saying that in that case, he's Potter. Why should he be Potter? If Chalosar Rav Siya, even if Seifah B'Onus, he should be Chayim.
According to the initial principle, yes.
According to that principle that we've learned.
Right.
That's the question. What are you, Mela, if you say according to Abaya that we're talking about, regardless whether he went into town at the right time or the not, fine. You could argue if he went into, fine. Abaya can say like this. If he went into town at the time when people usually go in, fine. I agree it's not Pshia. It's like Aveda in that case, fine. It's something that could have been preventable. If he had stayed with the animals, he might have been able to prevent it. Therefore, we can consider an Aveda. If he's a Shemachina, I'm sure he'll be Potter. But if he's a Shemachina, he'd have to pay. But you, Rabbi, were saying that in that case, even as a Sheva Socher, he's Potter, meaning it's not even Aveda, it's considered Oinus. But what then? And therefore, you have to say the Braisa that's saying that he could ever be Chayev could only be a case with Shia, because according to you, according to Rabbi, there's no case where leaving the flock could make it an Aveda. Either it's going to be Shia if you went in at the wrong time, or Oinus if you went in at the right time. Well, Chilos of Shia, the Sefer Oinus is Chayev.
Mm-hmm.
So why should he ever be potter? Why should there ever be a case that he's potter? Now, Tosfos brings in over here that actually we learned before when we learned about philosophy of Shia v'Sofa Ba'onas, we learned the opinion of the Rif over there that we only apply that if the onus had something to do with the Pshia. There was some connection between them. We had the case, for example, in Hamaskid of the person who hid money in a duck blind and Ganovim went and found it over there and took it, where we said it was Pshia because it could have been burnt, and in the end the onus was that Ganovim took it, but there's still a certain connection. If you hadn't placed it in there, if you had placed it in the ground like you were supposed to, the Ganovim wouldn't have found it. According to that,
not a full onus, basically,
well, in other words, the question is over here, what's the connection? Lahura, if we're talking about wild animals came and attacked, so what's the difference? Whether he had been there or not, Lahura, the onus would have happened anyway. Why should he be chayev just because of the Pshia? So they give a few different answers. Tosfos gives an answer, the David gives other answers. Among them are that yes, if he had been there, the animals might have been scared to attack in the first place. Or he might have been able to get his fellow shepherds to help fight them off, as we're going to talk about soon. Or whatever. There's a number of different answers. The point is that the point is that therefore there is reason to say, even though at the end it may have been an onus, because yes, it may have been two or three or whatever lions, but let's say he had been there, or let's say he and his fellow shepherds had been there, they might not have never have come in the first place. Therefore, there is a certain connection
between
Pshia and
onus. Yeah,
Umarachim b'chitchemiyah, that Ivan brings the topic, that normally, the Eivishtip put it, that normally animals are afraid of human beings. Yeah. Okay.
He might not have a very good knowledge about the lion. We're saying that the onus is, there's two categories of onus here. There's an onus that's preventable and an onus that's non-preventable.
In this case, no, we're saying onus is onus. If we're saying a Shema Sokar is potter for onus, but we're arguing over here if the onus was triggered by a pshia, then you're chayiv. In this case, again, if he had been there, like he was supposed to be, the animals might never have shown up, or he might have been able to fight them off or whatever. So in the end, yes, it turns out that there were animals, and we can evaluate that even if he had been there, he might not have been able to fight them off. But maybe they wouldn't have come in the first place if he had been there.
So that's the point. If we don't know, why do we make him chayiv?
Because chilasa b'pshia, because he was pshia by going into the city when he wasn't supposed to. And the answer is the Shoma, Kol Aryeh V'ol. We're talking about the reason why he went into the inn in the middle of the day is not Stam because he decided to take a break. He heard the sound of a lion, so he was afraid. He went into the city. Okay, then the question is, Yehochi, then you have to ask back the question. So then what do you mean? We evaluate the situation. I have a little Mabin. In that case, what could he have done? In that case, obviously, it's an Oinus. And the answer is, we expect that he should have prevented the animal from the wild animal from getting closer with other shepherds with sticks.
That is nobody that was around.
We're talking about when there were other people. Wait.
Yeah.
In that case, shepherds usually carry sticks with them. We're talking about obviously where they were close. Listen.
They have that staff that
listen,
they walk around.
Listen, let's continue the discussion and you'll see.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, then if you're saying that he could have fought off the lion with other shepherds and the sticks, then what's the difference? Why are we specifically talking about a shomer sacher? After the shomer chinam nami, wouldn't the same din apply to a shomer chinam? Yeah. The hamahu the amar shomer chinam shahoyel lekadim beroyim of maklos lekidim chayev. Abaye says to Rabbi, you doch are the one who say that if a shomer chinam could have gotten there with sticks and with sticks and shepherds and scared off the animal and he didn't, he's chayev. So therefore, what's the difference? Why are you saying only a Shema Sacher? Is the Brayta you're talking about. The answer is Shema Chinam, B'chinam Shema Sacher B'Sacher. The difference is, yes, they're both responsible to, but the Shema Chinam is only responsible to if he would be able to get other shepherds and sticks for free. So if there are other shepherds around, and he can call to them, come here, help me fight off this lion, and he doesn't, then he would be Chayev. As opposed to if they say, we're not going to unless you pay us, a Shema Chinam is not responsible to pay for it. But a Shema Sacher is responsible to pay them for it. And therefore, if he doesn't, so that's what we mean. So in other words, all told then, what the Braisa is saying is like this, according to Rabbah. This shepherd, in the middle of the day, he started hearing the sound of a lion. Now, being a Shema Sacher, he should have gone around to the other shepherds and offered them money to come and help him to prevent the lion from attacking, to get the lion away. Instead, he went into the city. Therefore, what we have to do is we have to figure out, well, in the end, how many lions were there? Would there have been enough with him and his fellow shepherd to be able to fight off the lions? If not, then it's an onus. If yes, then if yes, then maybe it's not pshia, but at least it's aveda. An aveda, Hashem Asachar is chayav for. Okay. If we're saying that Hashem Asachar has to pay for shepherds to help him, then the question is ad kama, up till what value is he expected to pay? The answer is ad kadei de mehen, up until the value of the animal. So the animals are worth $500. He has to be willing to lay out $500 to get the other shepherd.
Even if
you say $100. Wait. The question is, where do you ever find a case where Hashem Asachar is chayav for an onus? If we're saying that this case, if they can't fight off the animals, it's considered an onus, why should we, effectively what we're doing is we're making them pay for, because like this, if the lion comes and takes away the animals, then he should be potter as an onus, because $500. But you're saying if he didn't lay out the $500, he's going to be chayav, because it was an aveda. So effectively, you're making chayav for an onus. The answer is the hadr shokod man mi balabai. Afterwards, he'll be able to get reimbursed by the owner. So he'll come later and say, lions were coming. I managed to hire other shepherds for $500. That prevented your $500 worth of animals from getting destroyed. Pay up. Now pay me.
And he would be like, yeah, really.
Like, well, no, obviously they have other people. No, obviously they have other animals.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. In that case, then what is the owner gaining? The owner can say, well, in that case, look, I'm out $500 either way. It wasn't in my interest to have you save the animals. Fine. If it was going to cost the same amount as the value of the animals to hire the other shepherds to help fight off the animal, you might as well have left the lion take.
He has to pay back that money plus his car.
No, obviously he has to pay the guy the sky. We're not talking about that. But why should we say the Shem HaSachar should lay out the money and expect the Balabas to pay him? Why can't the Balabas say, you know what, forget about laying out the money. Forget about me paying you. Okay, I'll be out $500 worth of animals. The reason is nafkamina l'kusher d'chevesa. The difference is the owner has a benefit of it because there's the quality of the animals. He knows not so much the quality, but he knows them already. They're used to him. He's used to them. He knows their habits or whatever. So therefore that's a benefit. If he were to have, if these animals were to have gotten killed and he had to get a new one, he'd have to train
more
them.
More than $500.
Not more than $500. Let's say it's the same $500. But still, an animal that you've never worked with before, it's not the same. You have to learn. You have to learn its habits.
Yeah,
from him, in other words, there's an extra benefit in that. Inami l'tircha yiserta, or there's just the plain old tircha of going and finding new animals to buy.
Right.
So therefore, that's what we're saying. Therefore, the Shem HaSachar should do that. Lay out 500 to save $500 worth of animals, and then the Balabas is expected to pay him the 500 because he's got the benefit that now his own animals, which he's familiar with, are there still, and he doesn't have to go schlep out to buy new ones.
And therefore, becoming obligated to
pay
it back.
Yeah. Okay. Thus far, this was all Rabbah's opinion, saying that a Shem HaSachar who did according to what people normally do is potter because whatever happens after that is considered an onus. Now comes a different opinion. Rav Chista and Rabbah Bar Akuna loisvidal who hold Rabbah. They do not hold of what Rabbah said. Because the Amri, because they say on the contrary, you can argue to the Shem HaSachar, Lahoch Yavil Cha Agra, the reason why I'm paying you, the reason why I'm not just making you a Shem HaChinam, because I expect you're going to do a higher level of Shemirah. So it's not just good enough to say, well, people normally, when they're watching their animals, take a nap in the middle of the afternoon and go into town and leave the animals at the end of the day. You being a Shem HaSachar, you're supposed to be a higher level of responsibility. Yeah, maybe to the point of what Yaakov Avinu said by Yom HaChalani Chorev, etc.
Not according to Rabbah.
Not like Rabbah, who said that you'd be potter. They would say you're chayim. They would say you're chayav in this case.
You're chayav to a higher level.
So therefore, going back to the original case of the shepherd who was pasturing the animals near the river, and one of them slipped, Rav Bar Avuna and Rav Chista would say he's chayav.
He's
chayav. He should have been more careful to keep them far away, take them there one at a time,
because
whatever.
Everybody does the same
thing. Yeah, because fine, everybody can do the same thing with their own animals. You being a Shem HaSachar are expected to have a higher level of responsibility.
That's
Rav Chista and Rav Bar Avuna.
So
the Gemara tells a case in this connection. Tahu Bar Ada Sibela have a Kama Aver Chevesa Gamla Dinerish. Bar Ada Sibela literally means the porter. So apparently, besides being a porter, he also sometimes worked as a part-time shepherd. So he was once taking animals. He was a Shem HaSachar on these animals, and he was taking them across the Gamla. Gamla is a narrow bridge of Neresh. Neresh is the name of a place, and Gamla is a narrow bridge that they had over there. Doch v'chadu l'chaverta, as they were walking across the bridge, one animal pushed the other, v'shadisa v'maya, and knocked it down into the water, and it drowned. Also, he came to the papa for a din Torah, and the papa obligated him to pay. Amalei, so the
reason.
Well, Sabad asked him, "My havelei lemebed, what do you expect me to do different?" Amalei, so he tells him, "Iboy lochlaburi chode chode, you should have taken the animals across one by one." Now, by the way, Tosfos points out there was a different opinion that we had in Bava Kamma, where Rav Kahana said that to not do that is pshia. To not take them across one by one is pshia, and even a shemachinam would be chayim. Here, what we're saying is no, we're not saying like that. We're holding like Rava over there, who says it's not pshia. However, you being a shemasacha, you're expected that it's considered aveda. Okay. Sabad asked him, "Yadai to beba bar achsech mati lemeba chada chada." Do you know that your nephew would be able to? You're not literally your nephew; he wasn't his nephew, but meaning like a member of your people. Do you know any other yid who would be able to take him across one by one? And what are you being mechayev me? Meaning, in other words, it's not possible. When you have a whole herd of sheep, when you have a whole flock of sheep, you're going to take them across all together. You can't be expected to do one by one.
Yeah. It's almost impossible.
Amalei, so the papa tells him, tough luck. Kvat savchu kamoi de kamach. Many people before you have made the same complaint. V'loi kadashko v'hu, and nobody paid attention to them because we accept Rav Chista and Rav Baravuna's position, not Rav's position, that you as a Shema Sachar are expected to have a higher level of responsibility. Yes, you have to find some way of getting them across one by one. Hire other shepherds to up to the value of the animals or whatever to help you if you think there's going to be a problem. Or don't take them across the Gamla, take them across a normal bridge, whatever. Okay. Another case.
That's the
halacha.
That's the
halacha.
The Shema Sachar is held to a higher level.
The Shema Sachar is held to a higher level, okay, another case. Aivu askid kitna beirunya. Aivu, that was his name, one time deposited some flax for safekeeping by Runya.
Kitna
means flax. Also, Shabu Shantimine, and Shabu, which was the name of a robber, that Rashi says, in fact, it was a list in Missouri, and it was an armed robber that lived in those times, Shantimine grabbed it away from him. So on the face of it, it's onus. L'soif hukar aganav. In the end, though, they caught the ganav. They found it. They didn't know at first who it was. Afterwards, they found him. Also, a kamedir of Nachman.
Shabu.
They found this ganav. They found this gazlan Shabu. Yeah. So, well, whatever they did. Well, the point is, also a kamedir of Nachman chayve. So they came to a din Torah in front of Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman obligated Runya to pay for the flax, meaning he's going to have to lay out the money to pay for it, to pay the balabas. Later on, he can take this shabu to a din Torah and get reimbursed by him. But that's going to be his responsibility to do that.
Why is that?
Well, that's the question. Lema pliga de rabuna bar oven. Should we say that this psak din of Rav Nachman disagrees with what Rav Huna bar oven says? The shalach Rav Huna bar oven, because we know that Rav Huna bar oven sent a tshuva in halacha that went as follows. Nignava ba'onis, if you have a case where the object where the pikadon was stolen through an onus, it was like in this case, it was a list in Mizuya, and it was an armed robber. Ba'akaka chukar ganav, and afterwards the ganav was found. Im shemachinam hu, if he is a shemachinam rota nishba rota oisi imedin, if he wants, he can swear that it was stolen, and then he's potter. Or if he wants Oisa Imadin, he can make a din with him, which means Rashi says that he has the option then to lay out the money to the original owner and then
right.
take the ganav to Beis Din, right? Im Shema Sachar, Oisa Imadin, Vein and Nishba. If he's a Shema Sachar, since it was Gneva, then therefore he's obligated to take the ganav to a din Torah. He's obligated to pay for the pikadin because it was his responsibility, and then take the ganav to a din Torah. Which the difference is, even though it's an onus, and you think a shema sachar is potter from onus, in this case, because hukar a ganav, you're not going to lose anything from it. You're anyway able. You're going to be able to get it back. You're going to be able to get the money back from this list in Missouri.
Okay, but you're still then it means onus. You're responsible.
No, but you're just temporarily, just like we said before, that you're responsible to lay out the money and then have. Yeah. Now over here, Runya was a shemachinam. Why should he be obligated to take shabu to Beis Din?
Right.
Why should he not be able to? Right.
Making him responsible.
Let him swear. Let him swear that it was Nignav, and that's it. He caught her. And then if the Baal HaBos wants the value of his slack back, he'll take Shabu to Beis Din.
And the answer?
And the answer is Amar Rava. So Rava says no. There's no contradiction. There's no machlokes between them because Hosam Gabrit Pamuska Habu Kaimi. In that case, there were people from the government, like police or whatever. Pamuska means like police or whatever. Anshei Shulton, Rashi says, people who were appointed by the government. Yeah, like police or whatever.
They were there when
it happened. The Eid Rama Kola. Now, if Runya had yelled that this guy is stealing the flax, Habu also a Maslin, and then they would have come and saved it. Therefore, you can't consider it that it was a true oinus. You can consider it more that
if he had a gun to his head.
No, we're obviously talking about that there was a situation. There was a situation he could have yelled and gotten them, and the police would have come and frightened off the Shabu and prevented him from stealing it in the first place. Since he didn't, then therefore that can be considered Pshia. And therefore,
based on the same principle, then the Shana Chinam is not responsible for Onus.
Exactly. Which means, by the way, Tosfos says, really, it means Runya would be liable to pay even if we never did catch Shabu. The reason why we mention the detail that Hukar Aganav is because that's what made us think. When we asked that Rav Nachman seems to argue with Rav Huna Ba'ovin Din, that was based on the fact, well, since we caught Shabu, on the face of it, Hashem Chinam nevertheless does not have to get involved. He can swear and be potter. So in that case, we thought, and now we're answering that no. In this case, the whole thing was caused by Runya's Pshia, therefore it wouldn't really matter. Even if Shabu was not caught, we would still obligate Runya to pay. And like this, if not Hukar Aganav, fine, he's going to be out that money.
So basically, we're still keeping the conclusion.
Hashem Asachar has a higher level of responsibility.
But not up to the point of onus. Right. Real onus.
Right.
Like if there were no government police there.
Right, exactly. Then he would not be involved in that.
So by the way, going back to the Sikha now, I'm sort of half looking at it while we're learning. So I think I did have it right then. The Shema Sacher is basically the one who wants to keep mitzvahs, but he's still at the level, I still want a reward for it. I still want at the end a reward for it. I still want to be paid at the end. So I guess I did have it backwards then. Whereas the Socher is the other way around. The Socher is basically he wants to enjoy the world. I want to basically enjoy the world, but I understand I can't get it for free like a shoyl. I have to do something. I have to do some kind of avodah. So the socher is worse off because he's doing it in order to enjoy the world. He just realizes, fine, you can't get nothing. You can't get something for nothing. Therefore, we want to bring him up to at least the level of the Shema Sacher, where he'll do it fine, in expectation of reward. But at least he'll start with the Avodah. He'll start from the angle of doing Avodah first, rather than from the angle of what am I going to get out of it first.
And therefore, that's why the Sacher
is like the Shema Sacher.
And this is all from the Shalah?
It's based on the Shalah that Rebbe teaches it out in the Sikha.
He's like the Shema Sacher,
but he's on a lower level than him. Therefore, at least we want to bring him up to that level.
Is
on a higher level because at least he's first doing avodah. He's doing it mainly because I want to do avodah. I also want to get a schar out of it, as opposed to the socher is saying the other way around. Basically, I'm in it because I want to enjoy the world. But I understand you can't get something for nothing. Fine, but he's doing avodah only because if I don't do avodah, fine, I know I'm not going to get any of the good things
so
in life.
Say the same thing about Shem and as opposed to
Shem
and Sof, no, but he wants to enjoy his car.
But he's saying the other way around. The basic reason I'm in the world is to do avodah. However, as long as I'm doing the avodah, I would like the sky for it.
All right, let's
continue. We're very far behind, so let's see what we can do. Mishnah says, Ze'ev echad eina oinus. Continuing on the topic, what's an oinus and what's not. If one wolf comes and attacks the flock, that's not considered an oinus because you could easily fight it off. Shnei ze'evim oinus, but if two wolves come, then it's an oinus. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'shas mishlachas ze'evim, at a time when wolves are going wild, Rashi says mishlachas means mishlachas v'gzeres ha'melach. The Eibishter has decreed so that the wolves are running wild, but they're less afraid than they usually are. They're being more aggressive than usual. Then after ze'ev echad onus, then even one wolf is an onus because then they're more aggressive.
They're dangerous.
Yeah. Further, shnei klovim ein oinus. If two dogs attack, then that's not an oinus. Yadua habavli oimer shem Rav Meir. It depends. Meruach achas ein oinus. If the two dogs come from one direction, it's not an oinus. Mishtei ruach is oinus. But if they come from two different directions, even dogs are an oinus. Halistim hareza oinus. If you're attacked by a bandit, then even one hareza oinus. Then it is an oinus.
Even not mizuyan.
Mizuyan, what mizuyan or not, we'll talk about in the Gemara. Wait. Ha'ariv, ha'doiv, ha'nomer, ha'bardlus, ha'nachosh. If you're attacked by a lion or bear or a leopard or bardlus, there's a few different possibilities. Rashi translates bardlus with a word that means a polecat, which is an animal similar to a ferret or a skunk or something. Yeah, whatever. Some people translate it as a cheetah or a hyena or whatever. Yeah, ha'nachosh or a snake, ha'reila oinus. All those things are oinus. Now, when is all that? If the wild animals or the listim or what have you came on their own, but if the shepherds brought the animals into an area known to have wild animals or bandits, then it's not an onus, and you chayv. Mesa kedaka, if the animal dies just naturally, hareza onus, and that's considered an onus, again, that even a shemus sacher would be potter for. Sigfa umesa, but if he distressed the animal, which means Rashi says, for example, he didn't feed it properly, he put it out in the heat during the summer or in the cold during the winter, umesa, and then it died, ain't onus, then that's not an onus.
And he's
chayav. Which Tosfos asks, and what's the chiddush in it? The point is, Tosfos says, even if, let's say, not later on the animal died, and not necessarily was it directly caused by that, nevertheless, he's chayav because we have to assume that it's a Tosfos says because he should, it was still pshia because he shouldn't have done that to it in the first place. Other Mefarshim say a different reason. There's strong reason to attribute that what happened from when you did that, from the day when you didn't feed it, or what have you, it started getting weak, and therefore eventually something else happened, and it died.
Tell me a second. That's not kedarka. So what did we need this
That's day? The point. Even though you would think he was misagafit, and then a week later it died. He should be able to argue on the face of it that I was misagafit one day. It died the next week. What does one have to do with the other? The answer is that no. We say, first of all, it was pshia on your part, Tosfos says, and second of all, there's strong reason to attribute the reason why it died next week is because of what you did to it last week. There's a certain direct connection.
We could derive that from
the... We want it to be more specific. Also, the Rosh Hitzuk and Minachla, if the animal goes up onto a high mountain peak and falls off and dies, hareza oinus, then that's considered an oinus, which we learned back in Hamaskid, what do you mean if it went up, why didn't you stop it? The reason is, we said over there, because the animal was too strong for you.
Yeah.
It overpowered the shepherd. Too fast. No, you're supposed to have it on a leash. But the point is, even if it's on a leash or whatever, it was too strong. It schlepped you. On the other hand, hell of a Rosh Hitzuk and Minachla, on the other hand, if the shepherd took the animal up to a high peak, Renuflo Mesa, and then it fell and died, ain't an oinus, and that's not an oinus. Even we said over there, even if it's Hachili took it up there because it was a nice, good pasture up there, he's still responsible to keep it on a tight leash, and if he didn't, then he's chayav.
So I've seen the pictures of an eagle taking a calf and bringing it right in the air and let it drop and killing it.
Okay.
It's amazing.
Onward. Okay, the Gemara says, we learned in the Mishnah that one wolf is not considered an oinus. Well, Tanya Zevach had oinus. Don't we learn in the Braisa that one wolf attacking is considered an oinus? That Braisa is talking about when the wolves are running more wild than usual, more aggressive than usual. But Rabbi Yehuda here, and that Braisa would be according to Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah. Doesn't mean the Halacha is like it, though.
It's not.
The Halacha is not Mishnah, usually. Okay, we said, Halistim hareza oinus. The question is, am I? Why should we say that a robber is considered an oinus? Loiki gavra lahade gavra. Don't you have one? It's one against one. Why shouldn't the shepherd is presumably at least as strong as the listim? Why shouldn't we expect he could afford him off? And if he didn't, then it's not an oinus. Amar Rav, the listim mizuyan. So that answers your question. Rav says the listim of our Mishnah is armed. Shepherds are not usually armed. If the listim is armed, then okay, well, Iboilu, so now we have the question, Listim Mizuyan, Veroi Mizuyan, Mabu. What if both of them are armed? Mi Amrin and Uki Gavra Lahade Gavra, do we say, well, we're back to his equal again, so therefore he should have been able to fight him off, and if not, then it's not an oinus. Oidoma, Hai Mosa Nafshe, Vahai Lai Mosa Nafshe. Or maybe you say not. Maybe a robber is more willing to be Mosa Nefesh. That's a person goes into a life of crime, he expects that at some point he's going to get killed. That's the idea, for example, behind the concept in the Torah of Baba Machteres, that a person is breaking into a house, for example, you're allowed to kill him because he's willing to give his life. And he's the point is also he's willing to kill or be killed. He's willing. So maybe in the same case over here, this list of mizuyin is yeah. The answer is mistabrik. Logical to say yes. Yes, we can expect that the listim is more willing to give up his life. Therefore, he's going to fight harder. And therefore, even the shepherd himself has a weapon. It's still an oinus. I'm going to buy the rabbi. Suppose that ashkeche roya. Suppose that one day the roya meets up with the ganav. But Amalei, and he starts beforehand, before the ganav ever came and stole anything. But Amalei, and he starts kind of trash talking him. Rashi says v'gizmo v'chirfoy, like he tells him he talks big and sort of makes fun of him.
He taunts him.
Taunts him, yeah. But Amalei, he says like this, ganavasaria. You got Saria. Rashi says two possibilities. Saria can mean musrach, means smelly, stinky, whatever. Or it can mean Saria. He brings from the garden that Saria means pesheya. You pesheya. You wicked guy. Anyway, beduch the planya yasvin. You should know we are situated with our flock in such and such a place. Kach lekach gavri ikabadon. We have X number of people with us. So if you try to steal, then we're going to kill you. Kach lekach kalbi ikabadon. We have X number of dogs with us. We have arranged that there are X number of sharpshooters, people who know how to sling. People who know how to sling arrows, who know how to sling stones. Yeah, with it are arranged for us. And but also the shock of me. Now, in the end, the ganav comes and then and braves all of that and comes takes and then takes some of the animals. My, what's the deal? Amalei, so Abaya answers him. Okay. Effectively, that means the shepherd brought the animals into a place of chayav listin. Because, in other words, there's no difference, as the Rambam teaches it out, there's no difference between bringing the animals to a place known to be infested with bandits, or in this case, by trash-talking him like that, by taunting him like that, it's as if you brought the listin, yes, like he attracted the listin. Right. Now, with that said, with that said, though, actually, the Ma'arik brings that actually it's not just the fact that he's taunting him. And the point is, we can argue in this case, maybe the shepherd thought he was doing it for a good reason. He really thought that with that he's going to scare off he's going to deter him. Therefore, based on that, the Tzoyt argues that it seems from the post scheme that if this shepherd was a Shemach Chinam, Hitaka would be Potter. Because it's not Pshia. It's not like he's being careless by doing this. He really thought that's fine, but he didn't realize that's going to make the guy come all the more.
He should have realized, and that's why he's
that's the point. So the Tzoyt HaChoshen argues that no, he's not a Pshia. Therefore, if he's a Shema Chinam, he is in fact Potter. Only if he's a Shema Sachar, we cannot consider it an Oinus. It's something in between then. It's Aveda. It's Gneva, it's Aveda, whatever you want to call it. Something that a Shema Chinam would be Potter for, and a Shema Sachar would be fine. Mishnah says, when you have, we talked in the previous Mishnah about the basic responsibilities of the four shomrim. A shomer chinam can make a condition with the owner of the object that if something happens to it, he will be potter from a shura. And by the way, he can. He's able. You're able to make such a condition, even though the Torah imposes on him a shura in the case of gneva or aveda or what have you. He can make a deal ahead of time, saying, I'll watch your thing for you, but only on condition that if something happens to it, you're not going to bring me to Beis Din and make me swear. You're entitled to do that. Mephoshim talk about the question, by the way, can he make a t'nai to be potter from Shia? One way of looking at it is technically yes. I mean, nobody might accept that, but it is in principle possible. Others say that no, then you can't really consider him a shomer at all. The Ashoyal is potter from the Shalim. Ashoyal can make a condition before he borrows the thing that he will be potter from paying in certain cases, such as Gneva or Aveda or what have you. Or Oinus. In that case, so he'd be able to say that. I'm like a Shema Socha, basically. Notice, Socha, v'hasocha li'es paturin m'shvu or mil'shalem. And a Shema Chinam, or a Shema Socha, or a Socha, can make a condition that they will be potter from a Shavua or from paying, as the case may be. So, the rule is like this. Kol amasna amashakos of a Torah t'noi bottle. If you make a t'nai against something that it says in the Torah, then the t'nai is bottle. Also, if you make a t'nai and put the ma'isa first, so Rashi says it means that like the proper way of making a t'nai is we learn from t'nai b'nei godu b'nei Reuben that if you do X, there is positive and negative also, but we're not getting into that right now. Now we're talking about a different thing, that you have to say, if you do X, then I will do Y. But if you say it the other way around, I will do Y. If you do X, That's not a valid tnai. Then you have to do the thing regardless because it's different how you say it. Whether you say tnai first and then the ma'isa. It has to be like tnai b'nei Gad or b'nei Reuben. Moshe says to them, if you cross the Yarden, then you will receive this land. But if he had said the other way around, you will receive this land if you cross the Yarden, it wouldn't be a valid tnai. Then they would be entitled to that land regardless.
So they did two parts of the tnai.
That's a different thing. We're not getting into that over here yet. But we're going to learn in the Gemara. Reb Meir is the one who says that it has to be completely like tnai b'nei Gad or b'nei Reuben. So we're going to see.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. The Rambam has a different understanding of tnai kodesh l'maisa, that it means if you, for example, let's say by kedushin, the Rambam says, if a man were to be makadosh a woman, if he were to give her the ring or the prutah or what have you, and then say, this is almanach that you do such and such, then the almanach is worthless. The kedushin is kedushin. Meaning the Rambam says it doesn't matter what order you say things in, it matters whether you do the thing before saying the tnai.
In which case,
it's not a valid tonight, and the kedushin are kedushin. As opposed to if before giving her the ring, he were to say that I'm going to be mekadesh you on condition that whatever, and then he gives her the ring according to the Rambam, that would be a valid tonight. Okay. And continues the mission of a whole
the halacha between these two.
The halacha, I think, is like the Rambam. I'm not sure about that. It doesn't matter what order you say them in, but you have to do for everything. Any tnai where in the end he will be able to keep it, even though let's say right now he's not able to. So even if he made the tnai at a time when it wouldn't have been possible, but later it is tnai kayim. Nevertheless, the tnai is kayim, as we'll see an example in the Gemara. So, okay, it's might have time now, but maybe since we have a lot of catching up to do, can we get back together for a few minutes after might have and do a little more?
Solomon, what do you think?